Chapter 3. Andy was sacked out on the office couch, but Linda couldn't sleep. She kept herself going with coffee and cigarettes, waiting for something to happen. The initial adrenaline flow had subsided quickly, and now exhaustion was starting to set in. She couldn't understand it. There had been no word from Steele. She'd been up all night. Why hadn't he called? By now, all of Strike Force would be out looking for him. Even his old friends on the force couldn't overlook what happened. Four cops were dead. Much as she hated to believe it, there seemed to be no doubt about it now. Steele was out of control. He'd snapped, just like Stalker had before him. The police department had gone on the air with 24-hour hotline numbers for citizens to call if they spotted Steele. The federal marshals were out combing the streets of no man's land. Steele was out there somewhere. And sooner or later, they would run him into the ground. "I guess you were wrong about your friend Steele," the news director had told her before he went home for the night.
"Maybe I was,"
she'd responded. "Maybe. Linda, he just gunned down four cops, for God's sake. Strike Force cops, no less. His old fellow officers. Face it, the computer brain of his is on the fritz. He'd gone off the deep end, just like Stalker." It certainly looked that way. The slain officers had positively identified him before they died. When she had spoken with him for that interview, he had seemed perfectly lucid, completely rational. She had believed him. Had her instincts been completely wrong? Maybe, at that point, he hadn't completely lost it yet. Thinking back on it now, the whole story he had told her about Bryce Carman could merely have been a part of the developing psychosis, a paranoid delusion that had built until he finally snapped. He believed that he was being persecuted, and now he had made it real. She felt sick about it. Outside, the city was coming awake. People were on their way to work. There didn't seem to be any point in waiting anymore. She wasn't going to hear from him. He was beyond reach now. Sooner or later, they'd find him and shoot him down, finish the job that Victor Borodini's assassins had started. But how many more people would have to die first? The phone rang and she jumped. She snatched it up.
"Linda Tellerman."
"Miss Tellerman,"
said the operator downstairs.
"I have a Miss Donna Barrett on the phone. She says she has information on the Steele case and insists on speaking only to you."
Donna Barrett? The name meant nothing to her. Could be a crank call. Whenever a story like this broke, they all came out of the woodwork. Linda didn't feel like talking to anybody just now. But she was a newswoman, and she couldn't overlook the possibility of a lead. She sighed.
"Okay, put her on."
"Miss Tellerman?"
"Yes? You said you had some information, ma'am?"
"My name is Donna Barrett. I'm a friend of Donovan Steele's. I just heard the news about what happened last night, about Steele killing those four police officers. It isn't true."
"Miss Barrett, those officers identified him before they died."
"It's impossible! They couldn't have!"
"The dispatcher heard them, ma'am. It was on the radio. They said..."
"That they were lying! Or it was a mistake! Steele couldn't possibly have done it!"
"How do you know that, ma'am?"
asked Linda patiently.
"Because he was with me!"
Linda took a deep breath and rolled her eyes.
"You're saying that he spent the night with you, ma'am?"
"Yes! I mean, no! Not the way you think. I mean, he was here in my apartment. They've been staying with me. Him and Raven. We were up most of the night talking."
"I see,"
said Linda, realizing that her knowing about Raven didn't prove a thing. Steele had received a lot of media coverage, and Raven had been mentioned. She was also mentioned in all the latest news reports as being in Steele's company. They used a mugshot taken during one of her busts for prostitution.
"Is he there with you now?"
"No! They both left just a little while ago. As soon as they heard the morning newscast, I tried to stop them, but they said it would be too dangerous for them to stay with me. They didn't want me to get any more involved. You don't believe me, do you? How can I convince you? Wait, I know. He spoke to you recently, several times. Once when he called you from here to set up that interview, again when you interviewed him yesterday, and a third time after that, it must have been around 6 or so, when your interview wasn't aired. You told him there was nothing you could do about it, that the tape had been seized as evidence."
Linda sat up very straight.
"Where are you calling from, Miss Barrett?"
"My apartment! I didn't go to work today. I called in sick. It's on Perry Street, number 311, apartment 4C.
"Don't go anywhere. I'll be there as soon as I can."
"I'll be waiting."
Linda hung up the phone. There was no way she could have known about that interview. No way she could have known about what she'd said to Steele about the tape being seized as evidence.
"Andy, wake up."
"Huh? What is it?"
he slurred. "Put your shoes on. We're going out."
What? What time is it?
Never mind what time it is. Come on, wake up, goddammit.
All right,
he said, sitting up slowly and stretching to get the kinks out.
Where are we going?
But Linda was on the phone, dialing fast. She was doing something she had never done before. Someone at the Channel 4 newsroom answered on the second ring.
This is Linda Tellerman at Channel 7. Is Rob Summers there?
Hold on. I think he just came in. Rob, it's Linda Tellerman.
A moment later, the news director came on the line.
Linda, Rob Summers, how's the competition?
The competition's about to share a hot tip with you, Rob, she said. I've got a witness who will testify that Steele couldn't have done those killings last night. Interested?
Whoa, wait a minute. Steele was positively identified.
That's what I thought too, said Linda. But this witness can prove that Steele was with her when it happened.
That's impossible, even if it's true. Why are you giving me this?
She quickly told him about the interview and how it had been pulled, the tape seized and erased, and about how management wasn't backing her up because of Carmen's influence, and about how Donna Barrett knew things she could have only known if she had really been in contact with Steele.
I'm not going to get backed off on this one, Rob, she finished. There's something fishy here. I don't know what it is yet, but I am sure as hell going to find out. And they can't shut me up if other people have the story, too.
Jesus, they really seized your tape,
Summers said with astonishment.
Are you willing to be interviewed on camera about that?
You bet your ass I am, she said.
You realize that'll be a violation of your contract?
Fuck my contract. I can get a job anywhere in this town.
Hey, if they fire you, give us first dibs.
You got it.
Okay, where is this witness of yours?
I'm leaving to meet her right now. 311 Perry Street, apartment 4C. Her name is Donna Barrett. Who are you sending?
Hell, I'm taking this one myself. Have you told anybody else about this?
No, but if you're not there within 5 minutes after I arrive, I'm calling Susan Smith at Channel 2.
I'm on my way.
Steele and Raven quickly ducked inside the lobby of a dilapidated apartment building as the Strike Force units cruised by. They were traveling in pairs now, with 4 men to each unit.
We can't keep this up, said Steele.
He was carrying the bag containing his battle mods. His battle rifle was slung across his back, and he also carried Raven's suitcase. In addition to that, he also wore his weapons harness and his sidearms. Raven had her purse slung over her shoulder, along with a few feminine necessities. It also held her 35-7 Magnum and several speed loaders. She also carried her assault rifle.
We're conspicuous as hell, he said. We need to find some place to hole up, at least until it gets dark. Then we can try to get out of the city.
And go where?
She asked.
The Brood Enclave, maybe, Steele said. I've still got friends there, and Snake won't give a shit about my being wanted.
He grimaced.
They'll probably think it's funny.
Okay. But how are you going to fight Carmen from Long Island?
I'll think of something. Besides, don't forget our ace in the hole. We still have Matrix.
It felt odd somehow to refer to his electronic clone as if it were something outside of himself. In a sense, it was. And yet, in another sense, it wasn't. It was a part of him, his own personality, reduced to software, hiding out somewhere in the electronic net. Just like his own software, he thought. The programming that his identity had become. He forced the thought away. That whole question wasn't something he wanted to deal with right now. The existence of the Matrix came not only as a shock from which he had still not quite recovered, it also called into question his own perception of himself. How could a man be in two places at the same time? But he could.
At least I'd know you'd be safe out at the Brood Enclave, he said. Or as safe as a woman who looks like you could be with that crazy bunch of bikers. I just wish you'd stayed with Donna.
Forget it,
she replied.
We've been through all that. Where you go, I go.
Look, you know I love you, he said, being blunt. But the fact is, you're slowing me down.
I can keep up,
she said defensively.
No, you can't. You can't move as fast as I can. And you're a lot more vulnerable. I don't want to have to worry about you all the time. I feel much better knowing you were someplace safe.
I feel safe with you.
Damn it! You're only in the way!
She set her mouth and gave him a look that he knew only too well.
Listen, I know what you're trying to do, and don't think I don't appreciate it, but I've been through lots worse than this, and you know that's true.
it was. The life Raven had led before he met her wasn't pretty.
I'm not simply going to sit twiddling my thumbs somewhere, wondering if you're still alive or not.
She continued.
I'm just not going to do that. You can't get rid of me, Steel. If you try, I'll only follow you. And I'll keep following you until I find you. And I swear to God, I'll kill anyone who tries to stop me. Face it, Steel. You're stuck with me.
He stared at her.
You're something else! You know that?
Yeah, one of a kind. So you'd better hang on to me.
He smiled.
Come on! Let's get out of here before somebody spots us!
They started toward the lobby door. Another man came in just then, carrying a sack of groceries. He saw them and stopped dead in his tracks, blocking the doorway. Steel saw recognition on his face.
Relax, he said. I'm not going to hurt you. I'm not crazy, no matter what they say. Please, just stand aside.
The man remained standing in the doorway, directly in their path. His expression was a mixture of fear and indecision.
You don't remember me, do you?
He said. Steel frowned.
No! Should I?
My name's Ralph Gianelli. You saved my life that time those thugs broke in and tried to rape my daughter. It happened right here, in this building.
Jesus!
Steel said. He hadn't recognized the man because his face had been a mask of blood at the time. Some members of the Lords had spotted his young teenage daughter and decided to have some fun. They'd broken into the apartment and stomped Gianelli half to death when he tried to protect his little girl. She was only about 14. Steel had heard her screams and responded. Those gang members wouldn't be brutalizing anybody else ever again.
There's police all over the place out there, Gianelli said. You better come upstairs with me.
Look, Mr. Gianelli, I appreciate what you're trying to do, but...
But nothing. Steffi's all I've got since her mother died. If not for you, God knows what they'd have done to her. Please, you've done something for me. Let me do something for you.
I'm a wanted man, Mr. Gianelli.
Ralph.
Ralph! Helping me would make you an accessory.
So I'm an accessory. I've never been anything in my whole life. I can at least be an accessory. That's something. Now come on, get up those stairs before somebody sees you. Here, put this on.
He took off his rumpled fedora and gave it to Steel.
Pull it down over your face. The neighbors here aren't nosy. It don't concern them. They don't want to know about it. But it can't hurt to be careful. They got a reward out on you. Now come on, this bag ain't getting any lighter.
Thanks,
said Steel, putting on the hat and pulling it low over his eyes. They followed Gianelli up the stairs to his apartment. It was incredible to think that people actually lived in a hole like this. The walls were covered with graffiti. The plaster was cracked and flaking off. Parts of the ceiling had fallen down. The stairwells were littered with trash and stank of urine. The whole building stank. The people here had no power and no running water. They threw their waste out the windows or down the elevator shafts. This was how people had lived in no man's land, in slums abandoned by the city government, because they had no resources to take care of the people here or to win back the territory from the gangs that controlled it. The people here simply had to get by as best they could on their own. It was like living in the Middle Ages. Hope was a commodity in scarce supply. They encountered only two other people on their way up to Gianelli's apartment. Gianelli took Raven's suitcase and gave Steel his bag of groceries so that Steel could hide his face behind it. Neither of the people they met gave them a second look. They did not greet Gianelli. They did not care. They didn't want to know. They did not wish to be bothered. They only wanted to survive. And in no man's land, one of the laws of survival was minding your own business. Gianelli bolted the door behind him. Steel noticed that he had added quite a few heavy deadbolts to the door since the gang members had broken in on him. He'd also added a long steel rod, about 6 feet in length, that fit into a steel reinforced hollow in the door, the other end fitting into a matching slot in the floor. The apartment was pitiful. A battered, stained, and torn sofa with the legs broken off it sat against one wall. There were several wooden crates used as end tables, a couple of threadbare chairs, the upholstery torn, the arms on one of them broken off, a wood table, painted an ugly brown, and four wooden chairs that had seen much better days, paint flaking off the walls, plaster missing from the ceiling, a ripped and stained throw rug that looked as if it had been fished out of the garbage somewhere, and a large, charred metal garbage can used to burn trash and make a fire to provide some heat and illumination at night. But for all that, the place was clean and as neat as Gianelli knew how to make it. There were some drawings tacked to the walls, done in ink and pencil. Obviously his daughter's work. They displayed talent and sensitivity. One was a drawing of her father's face. Surprisingly good. Another was a self-portrait. Still another was a portrait of a woman who must have been her mother. The resemblance was clear. There were also pictures of horses, birds, flowering country meadows with streams running through them. Dreams of a pastoral life the young artist would probably never know. It was touchingly poignant.
Steffi? Gianelli called. Steffi, honey, we've got company.
The girl came out of the back bedroom. At 14, she was already almost fully mature physically. Her breasts were firm and round. Her bare legs long and sleek. Her slim figure encased in ratty denim shorts and a black t-shirt. She was barefoot, and her long black hair framed a slow-eyed, olive-complexioned face of an innocent young beauty, an inner-city Madonna, a fragile flower in the bombed-out urban wilderness. It was hard to believe that a worn and weary man like Gianelli could have produced such a child, and even harder to think of what little future she had. Her face lit up when she saw Steele.
Mr. Steele!
She came running up to him and threw her arms around his neck, hugging him fiercely.
Hello, Steffi! This is my friend, Raven!
Hi.
A somewhat shyer greeting.
Are you his girlfriend?
Yeah,
said Raven with a smile.
I'm his girlfriend. Nice to meet you, Steffi.
She's really pretty,
Steffi said to Steele.
Can you stay for dinner?
Her face instantly looked pained. She glanced at her father with anxiety. Her thoughts were transparent. Have we got enough?
Yes, they'll stay, said Gianelli.
It's okay, said Steele. We've already eaten. We're not really very hungry. We'll only stay till it gets dark. Then we'll be on our way.
You'll have dinner with us, Gianelli said.
No, really, Ralph.
You gonna insult me by refusing?
Steele took a deep breath.
No, I'm not gonna insult you, Ralph. But let's be practical here. I know how difficult things must be for you. And you've got Steffi to take care of. You're already doing us a big favor by giving us a place to stay till nightfall. The slate's been wiped clean as far as I'm concerned. Please don't make me feel guilty for taking food out of your mouths.
Ralph sighed.
You'll have some coffee at least. Please, at least let me offer you some coffee.
Okay, Ralph. Coffee will be fine. Thanks.
Steffi kept staring from Steele to her father and back. She sensed something was wrong.
What is it?
She asked Steele.
Are you in some kind of trouble?
They had no radio or TV, and newspapers would have been a luxury. She didn't know. Ralph must have heard it on the streets or at work, whatever kind of job he had. Down here in no man's land, it was probably something gang-related, for one of the operations they controlled. He would be paid barely enough to live on, working for the same people who tried to beat him to death and rape his daughter. The harsh realities of life in no man's land.
No, no! Everything's okay, said Steele. I'm just...
He's in trouble with the police, said Ralph.
Steele glanced at him with surprise.
I tried to insulate my daughter from a lot of things, Mr. Steele,
said Ralph. He sighed.
Stupid, I suppose. I just wanted to protect her. Instead, I made her vulnerable. I don't keep nothing from Steffi anymore. I don't want to lose her. She's all I got.
What happened?
Steffi asked.
What kind of trouble?
Steele glanced at Ralph uneasily.
They say you went crazy and killed some people, Steffi,
Ralph said.
Police officers.
No, it's not true. I don't believe it.
She looked at Steele with alarm.
It isn't true.
No, Steffi, it isn't true, said Steele.
He put their things down as Ralph started to get their dinner ready. Canned beans heated over Sterno. The coffee was made the same way. It was probably the most expensive thing he had ever purchased. Offering them coffee, for Ralph, was the equivalent of offering a rare wine. But there was no way Steele could have refused.
Then why are they after you?
It's a long and complicated story, Steffi.
Tell me!
Steele glanced at Ralph.
It's okay, Ralph said. I'd like to hear it too.
While Ralph heated up the canned beans and the coffee, made in a battered pot with a handful of grounds thrown into water he'd brought home in a 5-gallon jug, Steele told them a brief version of the story.
So you had to kill those soldiers in the helicopter, Ralph said. It was self-defense, and they murdered your friends.
Yes, but I'm afraid no one's going to see it that way,
Steele said.
What are you going to do?
Get out of the city. Try to clear my name somehow.
It isn't fair,
said Steffi.
Life isn't fair, honey,
Raven said.
The sooner you learn that, the better off you'll be.
You can stay here,
Steffi said.
We can hide them, can't we, Daddy?
No, said Steele. We can't stay here. Your daddy's already done enough. A lot more than he should have.
But you helped us.
And now you're helping us, said Steele. We're even. Besides, if I'm going to try and prove I'm innocent, I can't stay here and just hide. It wouldn't be fair to your father. And it would put both you in danger.
Daddy will go to the police and tell him you didn't do it,
Steffi said.
No, said Steele. He mustn't do that. They want to know how he knew, and he'd have to tell them that I'd been here, and then he'd be in trouble for helping me. Besides, they wouldn't believe him anyway. There isn't any proof.
But there must be something we can do,
said Steffi.
There is, said Ralph. Steele glanced at him sharply. We can tell people, Ralph said. Maybe it ain't much, but it's something. Get the word out on the streets you're being framed. Folks down here aren't much for getting involved in things, he added. But they know you tried to do for them. They'll still talk about that time you took on the Chingos and how you saved that little girl. And I'll tell them what you did for us as well. I never told anyone after.
He moistened his lips and looked down.
I was ashamed. Ashamed I couldn't protect my little girl.
You've got nothing to be ashamed of, Ralph,
said Raven.
Steele told me about what happened. You stood up to them. And there were what, four of them? All younger than you and armed? Believe me, there's a lot of people who wouldn't have done that, even for their own daughters. Take it from me. I know. I never knew my parents, but I knew a lot of girls who... Well, let's just say that I knew a lot of girls who didn't have fathers like you.
Ralph made a tight-lipped grimace.
You'd be better off not saying anything, Steele said. Soon as it gets dark, we'll sneak out of here. Nobody has to know about this.
Look, said Ralph, you saved my life. They would have killed me. And as for Steffi, well, you saved her too. And you took me to the hospital and paid for them taking care of me.
I didn't pay, said Steele. The government did. I just fixed it with the people I was working for.
Same difference. I never even had a chance to thank you. I'll admit, when I first saw you downstairs, I was scared. I didn't know what to think. After what I'd heard about...
He took a deep breath.
But I know now. I don't know what I can do, but I'm sure as hell gonna do something.
He will, too!
Said Steffi, gazing at her father with proud confidence.
You'll try, won't you, Daddy?
Yeah, honey. You bet I'll try.
Steele didn't know what to say. Out there, the police were hunting him. Many of them officers he'd known and served with. Hunting him because they believed him to be a lethal machine. Dangerous and out of control. And here was a man he barely knew. Didn't really know at all, in fact. Taking a risk for him. Sharing what little he had with him. Because he was grateful. Because he cared. People didn't care about machines. To this man and this young daughter, he was human. Not a machine. Ralph knew what he was, but he didn't matter to him.
Folks down here aren't much for getting involved in things,
he'd said.
But they know what you tried to do for them.
Steele was deeply touched, and he didn't know how to show it. He settled for taking Ralph's shoulder and giving it a gentle squeeze. It hardly seemed to be enough, but for two men who, like many men, were never very comfortable with displays of emotion, it sufficed. Shit, thought Steele, as Ralph poured out a small measure of coffee for each of them. He had no idea what to say. He actually felt as if his eyes were going to mist up, but he knew they wouldn't. Bionic optics couldn't cry. Raven took his hand and squeezed it. He squeezed back. They took their cups with the small portions of coffee, poured out as if it were an aperitif, and joined them at the rickety old table, where Ralph and his daughter sat guiltily with their heated cans of beans, and Ralph asked them once more if they were sure that they didn't want anything but coffee, and Steele once more declined, politely. Then Ralph bowed his head as Steffi folded her hands on the table and said grace, thanking the Lord for their blessings.
Amen,
Steele said softly. End of chapter.